You're listening to High Performance. This is what we've got lined up today.
I had this chat with Louis van Gaal, and then he told me, okay, Robin, I'm the coach, you are the player, and you have to go. Your time is up. I was like, yeah, but I still have a contract. He said, yeah, I don't care.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi there, I'm Jake Humphrey. You're listening to High Performance, the podcast that delves into the minds of some of the most successful athletes, visionaries, entrepreneurs and artists on the planet, and aims to unlock the very secrets to their success. Look, everyone needs a professor in their life, and mine is also an author and an expert in the success of sports teams. It's Damien Hughes. Look, Damien, as a Man United fan, I imagine you're looking forward to this.
Very much looking forward to it. This is somebody that was a catalyst when they came into Manchester United, so I'm intrigued to find out a little bit more about the mentality of a catalyst.
Well, let's get going then and welcome a footballer who is arguably one of the greatest strikers to win the Premier League, a cult hero at Arsenal. He controversially left to join their arch rivals at the time at Manchester United and immediately achieved his aim of winning the title. These days, the former Dutch international spends his time working as a pundit for BT Sport, but it's his career as a top level athlete that we are really interested in. Robin van Persie, welcome to High Performance.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Nice to be with you. Right, let's get straight into it then. In your mind, what is high performance?
Performing at the highest level, you know, and that's always difficult because at the highest level, you have to compete with opponents who are on a similar level, but you still want to be better than them. But that process is a long process to reach that goal, you know, to be on that level, which is satisfying for yourself, you know, because that's a long process.
So when did you think that you achieved high performance, M. Robin?
Well, in my mind, when I was at my highest level, I was about 27, 28, personally. So that's a very long road until that moment. And that starts basically from very young, from 5, 6 years old. You start that process without realizing it. But I was at my peak personally, mentally, physically, around that age.
So how would you have defined yourself? So when you were delivering high performance at that age, beyond the physical attributes of being fast and fit and strong, what were the sort of behaviours that you would describe you were demonstrating during that time of high performance?
Yeah, during that period, everything came together. It's like physically, mentally, more in balance. I was quite impulsive when I was younger, in my reactions, the way I was talking, the way I was behaving, the way I was playing. And that slowly changed over the years because just by basically listening, looking, learning, and improving myself as a person at the start. And then I brought that back into football, because at one point I realized that every game was such a struggle, and I didn't really want that. I didn't want to have a constant struggle.
In what way was it a struggle?
It's like, because the opponents found out that if they triggered me, if they talked to me in a certain way, or if they did all those things, they could get me sent off.
What would wind you up?
It was going both ways, because if the opponent was like stepping on my toes and sort of trying to bully me, I was going really hard, and I was going against it. But in the end, after a period, I started to think about that, and then it made sense to me. I was like, okay, the reaction I have, I shouldn't have that reaction. I shouldn't go against it. I should stand above it. So that is like a process of a couple of years, because if I go against it, then it would, then it's such a struggle. I was just like mentally, physically, I was drained after every match for quite a long time, from the age of 23 till 26. And then I realized that I was like constantly fighting, you know. And as well, I was, if I missed a chance, for example, that's a process as well. I was very emotional after I missed a chance. I was like constantly, no, and showing the world how disappointed I was. And then at one point I was like, yeah, but that's weakness somewhere, you know. Because then the opponent sees that I'm disappointed and that I'm not happy with myself. So I slowly start to change that. And I was like, okay, you know, if I don't show my weakness, then they don't have like, if I don't react on the bullying, if I don't react, if I miss a chance, then I become stronger and better. And once I started to do that, I talked with Arsene Wenger about this as well. Everything became lighter, you know. It was so heavy. It was, for all those years, it was heavy, but I was making it heavy.
Yeah.
I just needed a couple of years to realize that.
But what I find interesting on that, Robin, is that I think that takes real courage to have that reflection, because what you'd been doing had obviously worked for you. You know, like when you look back at the start of your career of leaving ex-Chelsea, and then the run-ins that you'd had with the coach at Feyenoord, that you'd obviously been fighting and resisting it, and you'd still been achieving success.
Yeah, but that was because of the love of the game, because I truly love football from the bottom of my heart. I love it. And that is what sort of saved me in a way, because I made some stupid mistakes over the years, you know, some silly ones. Or
what sort of things did you do?
From arguing to with all the players, you know. It's like you have to know your place as well. In football, it's like when you're young, that's your place. You have to earn the right, basically. And I wasn't doing that. I was very impulsive. I was very against the rules somehow. So why was I doing that? Why was I against the
What do you say? I wonder whether you almost felt you needed to be like that to show you cared and to show you wanted to be the best. You know, you didn't want to just cruise into training and cruise through training and cruise through a game. You almost felt you needed to have a battle every game. To show your teammates and yourself,
but it was going too far. It was going too far and was becoming a problem, because I wasn't creating nice stuff. I was making problems for myself. I wasn't really expressing myself good enough just to solve the problem, because most problems started with communication. If you just talk about it in a normal way, you can solve a lot of possible problems. And so over the years, I kept asking questions, and I even wrote stuff down to myself. So at one point at Arsenal, after 2 years, I wasn't satisfied. I wasn't happy. It was going okay, but not good enough. So I started to write a letter to myself. What are my positives and what are my negatives? Wow. And then I noticed that I was lying to myself. I was making myself look or feel better.
Really?
So by reading it back, I was thinking, nah, that's not true, Robbie.
And did you do that on your own, or did your just wife myself. Help you with that?
Yeah, well, I was talking with my wife a lot and with my friends. And then that is something as well. Friends have an influence. Everyone in your life have an influence. And you need to, at one point, you need to be very honest to yourself. If those people in your life, whoever it is, if it's your wife or your friends or your family, have a positive impact on your life. And I think if you aim for to be the best in your sport, in this case, you have to be ruthless at one certain point. You have to cut out the people who bring negativity. And that is very hard.
How did you do it? Because there'll be people listening to this podcast and they're not professional athletes.
Yes.
But they find their life is made more difficult by the people around them, or maybe they drain them. What process did you go through to decide quite ruthlessly who could no longer be part of your life?
At one point, I was ending up in situations where I just didn't want to end up in. And it wasn't my fault. It was the fault of the people I was around with. And I was thinking, yeah, but okay, this is not bringing me further. You know, I have a dream. I want to live my dream. Because I had this romantic idea of my childhood friends. They should always stay with me. They should always stay connected. And I want them in my life forever. But okay, we have a different life. So at one point, I just made a roundup of what they bring, what they offer me, because I'm giving them time. In some cases, I gave them money. I tried to help them. But what do they give me? They have to, at one point, they have to accept what the situation is of their life and my life. And they have to sort of somehow live by those unwritten rules. And some of my childhood friends didn't do that. So they could not follow. They could not follow me because I was going fast in my life. So I just rounded it up. Do they bring something positive in my life? Anything. Even if it's something small, it's fine.
Yeah.
But they weren't at one certain point. And then I just invited them. And I said to two of my childhood friends, I said, guys, I said, I love you. I respect you. But I have different dreams than you guys. So it will stop here.
Wow.
It was tough.
And how old were you when you were having this conversation?
24, 25.
Wow.
Yeah, and these guys I knew from a young age. I said, because you make different choices, you have different priorities than me, and I can't have that. I can't have negativity in my life because, you know, this is where I want to go to. And if I have to constantly lose energy on you guys, it's not going to help me. That's ruthless. That's hard. But I felt that I needed to do that.
There's a really nice way of describing that. It's often we talk about the people that come with us are with us for seasons, reasons, or lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have periods, you have phases with people in your life. In my case, because I'm quite intense, I'm all or nothing. So I had to bring that level down of myself as well. I had to take it a little bit softer. That was a process of many years as well. So I, in my private life, I started to have friendships which were lighter, not so intense. And that cost less energy, you know, so I could focus more on football. But the main thing, I think, for everyone who's listening as well, is that keep asking yourself even stupid questions, you know, keep asking them to yourself and write letters to yourself of how it's going.
Do you remember what was in the letters?
Yeah, it was like, but that letter I wrote to myself was more about me as a player. What I liked about myself, what I could improve.
What, from memory, what could you improve? What did you write down in the improve column?
Goals. I should score more goals. I should make more runs in behind. By talking to Saul Campbell, Thierry Henry, Bergkamp, Pires, all these guys, Saul told me once, he said, Robin, he said, the way you play is a dream for a defender like me. I said, why? Tell me why. He said, because you want every ball on your feet. You have to force me to make a choice, you know, to close you down or to follow you. You have to make runs in behind. So I was like, okay, hang on. Then I came up with the rule, okay, out of three actions, at least one of them needs to be in behind because I have to hurt the defenders because Saul Campbell told me he doesn't like it,
yeah.
You know. So I was like constantly asking myself questions and listening to players who were better than me.
What you're describing is something that is sometimes referred to as the Zander letter, and it's named after, there's a conductor in Boston called Benjamin Zander.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was teaching sort of appreciation of music and the arts and things like that, one of the things he found with his students was that they got too caught up in the result that they were getting rather than learning about the process of appreciating music. So he used to get them to write a letter to themselves, but base it 12 months in the future and talk about all the things that they were going to achieve and all the things they were going to learn to love about music.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a chat with a colleague of mine I will not name his name because he's still playing. But he had this, he came up with this idea. I was listening to him for an hour, getting bored. He was like, yeah, I will buy 50 apartments and I will get a grand per apartment. And this is how I make my money. And he was playing in the Premier League back then. And then after 1 hour, he asked me what my opinion was. I said, but if you want to make money, you should work on your first touch and your header. You know, I said, this is what you should work on, because if you do that, you will make 10 times more than this grand per apartment. I said, if you fix that, you will be a world-class player.
And did he take your advice?
No, he didn't listen. He didn't listen. But to be fair to him, he had a good career. He had an okay career, but could be better, should be better.
I wonder how different, though, that Robin van Persie is to the Robin van Persie who was a petulant youth team player causing problems. I think that often when people first start out, whatever their career, and this isn't just about football, everyone starts out selfish because it's about me achieving my aims and my ambitions for my life. And I think it takes time to get to a point where, and I think we would both agree, you know, we're all in our, you're not quite in your 40s yet, but we're in our 40s. And life becomes about building other people up. And it's one of the best feelings, almost a better feeling than achieving yourself is helping other people to thrive. But it's hard to do that when you're 15, 16.
No, this is a very deep one, because will you get to this stage without being selfish earlier stages?
So you have to be selfish in the beginning to get the success to then be selfless and pass it on.
I think so. To actually achieve what you want to achieve, to be able to give back, you have to be selfish. Then football is ruthless. And at any business, it's like that. So you have to be selfish and you have to come up for yourself. You have to, in any team, in any business, you have to make sure that your position is there, safe. Because otherwise you get eaten.
Well, I'm interested in, say, like your experience of going into Manchester United. Yeah. So you'd been through a period of Arsenal where you hadn't been winning a lot and it had almost felt like there was a certain drift or a malaise, and then you went into an environment where you were expected to win the title. You came in and there was it seems to me like a very different culture. What was your experience of that?
It was a different world if you compare Arsenal with Manchester United. But I was ready for that world. You know, as a young player, it was much easier to get into the Arsenal team, into the Arsenal philosophy with a coach like Arsène. And Manchester United is like a beast. You know, you have to perform back in the day. So there was a different experience for me, but I was ready for that. You know, and like all those years of like asking questions and becoming better on all levels did help me to be ready for a challenge like that.
And what would you say was the biggest difference then that you noticed when you went into Manchester United?
If you're winning, everything is beautiful, you know, the whole, because the impact of Manchester United was bigger in terms of, you know, worldwide, in the amount of fans, etc., the size of the club. But if you look at when it doesn't go well, you know, at Arsenal, if it doesn't go well, you have your coach who protects you. You have your players who protect you. At Manchester United, you're on yourself. You're alone. You can no one protects you. And
is that healthy?
No, it's tougher. It's ruthless. And I've experienced that in my second year when things weren't going well. I was still scoring 18 goals that second year, scoring 12 for the national team. So it's not a bad season or something. But people were ruthless. It's not good enough. Bang. Then you're on your own. And that was sort of like a period where I was thinking, yeah, but I'm not that bad, you know. I was telling myself, I'm not that bad of a player. I'm still scoring. Okay, maybe I'm not like last season or whatever, but it was just ruthless, hard. And then I had to, in my last season, I had this chat with Louis van Gaal. I think I chatted with you about the Czech, where I had two very good seasons with the national team. Then I worked, the season, his first season, my last season at Manchester was not great. And then I had this chat with Louis van Gaal, and then he told me, okay, Robin, I'm the coach, you are the player, and you have to go. Your time is up. I was like, but I still have a contract. He said, yeah, I don't care. He said,
wow. Did you see it coming?
Ruthless. Towards the end of it, I saw something coming, but not this ruthless. And the way he said it as well. And then, like, a lot of things go through your mind, you know, when you get a message like that. Because I still have a contract. My family was happy. It was my 11th year in England. We love living in England. What's next? You know, my kids going to school. They have their friends and everything. So in like a split second, all these things come across. Mm-hmm. And how do you react to that? You know, I said, okay. I said, we will see what happens. I said, that's your opinion. I said, but I have a contract and I'm happy in England and at Manchester United and my family is as well. So we will see what happens. And I just shook his hand, stood up. I was at the golf club in Mayer, stood up and left it.
And how quickly did you decide that on the training pitch and in games you would attempt to change his mind and prove to him that he's made a mistake?
Well, on the way back home, I was thinking, okay, this is tough, you know. This is so how do you react to a message like that, you know, that ruthless, that hard, that direct? And then loads of things came through my mind, and we started preseason. Then I wasn't allowed to play in the 11 against 11. I got a ball and do your own stuff. So I was like, okay, hang on. So you try to stay calm, stay cool. You know what I mean? But there's like loads of things happening. You're playing the macho card. Like, okay, doesn't affect me. It doesn't do this, but it does affect me and my family and my career. You know,
yeah, sure.
Big time. Maybe at that point, it was good for me to talk to someone outside my inner circle. But I was too stubborn as well to do that. Now, if I look back at it, there were maybe a couple of points in my career where I should have done that. I had that feeling like a life coach or a mental trainer. I always had the feeling, yeah, but these people will create problems instead of solving them. So I kept them at distance. And up until today, I never had a session with anyone in that way. But now I'm open to it. And maybe it's partly age, experience. But if I look back at my career, could have been a good case if I would have talked to someone like that at this particular moment, sure, for example. Yeah.
But it's often said that like the best managers are the best psychologists as well. So who would you say was the best coach you had that got the best out of you as an individual?
Well, I was lucky to have such great coaches. And, but Arsène was so intelligent. You could talk to him about anything. And what I learned from him as well, and this is like, is that when you talk to Arsène, he's not answering straight away, maybe you know that. He's letting the question in first, then he checks you out. When you have a normal conversation, he checks you from the front, from the left, from the right, then he answers. So I was like, I'm way too soon with my answers, you know? And sometimes I think, my answer is too fast, you know? I should have thought about it a bit longer. And then I saw him doing that in interviews and in, just by chatting to him. I was thinking, okay, I will pick that up from him. You know, that's clever.
Just you were learning more than just football from Arsène Wenger.
Yes, very much. And he's a professor in maths, in German, English, such a clever guy. I was learning as well off the pitch by looking at Bergkamp, even how they had their lunch. Early days, I had my lunch like quick, bang, in, out, always on the go.
Yep.
And then I saw these guys, they were putting their jacket on the seat and they were talking before they were eating. They were making jokes. Then they enjoyed their lunch. Then they had a nice cup of coffee. It was just so tranquilo, so relaxed, you know. And I was so everything except relaxed. I was all over the place.
I read a story Ian Wright told that when he shared with Dennis Bergkamp, and he saw him wearing pyjamas, and he said that he started to wear pyjamas because Dennis Bergkamp did.
Oh, really?
On a away trip. So,
yeah,
you're in good company in terms of copying him.
Yeah. Well, of course, yeah. Dennis was a very interesting person, character, player. It's like off camera, he's one of the funniest guys you will ever see, especially in English. So funny, so dry. It's ridiculous. It's just when the lights go on, he's shy, you know, almost, but very clever guy. And I learned a lot by just looking at him. Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Winning is an everyday mindset. On the Ways to Win podcast, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. You'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. And don't miss President Obama sharing how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Today's show is brought to you by Mint Mobile. You know, my favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. You know, that feeling of just decluttering your life and you think, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. Like, how have I been affording that? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan, go to mintmobile.com/HPP. That's mintmobile.com/HPP. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/HPP. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gig on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
So when you've spent your formative football years with Arsene Wenger, and he's taught you so much more than just football, yeah, almost like a father figure, lots of players talk about him like that. Mm-hmm. How difficult was the conversation the day when you went to him to explain what had to change at Arsenal for you to stay?
Well, there was actually before our last decisive chat, there was an Austrian training camp. Before that, we were changing our philosophies of how to bring the club forward. But it was not only between me and Arsene, because it was, like I told you before, there was more happening with Ivan, of course, and then the way he behaved and he handled the whole situation.
Do you want to talk about that?
If I look back at that whole situation, is that, you know, in that situation, I have to look at myself as well, where I could have done better or could have done something differently. If I look back at that open letter, I didn't mention it during our show with BT, that open letter, I shouldn't have done that. You know, if you look back at that, it is impossible to, in such a delicate, difficult situation of making a transfer after spending so much time at Arsenal, to make a decision to write an open letter to tell my truth in 2 pages is impossible.
And where did you do that? Sorry, Robin, where was the letter?
Yeah, I think back then I went to the newspaper because there was not...
In the Telegraph, I think. They ran out something like that.
So I did that. And that was because I was disappointed with Ivan, with his behavior. But I could not go into detail about what exactly then, you know, because it's just impossible to tell the whole story behind it. And partly was the fact that Arsenal didn't offer me a deal. Okay, but... so there was if I look back at that, I should have done that better.
Because the difficult thing for Arsenal fans, even now, is, you know, we talk about the fact they didn't offer you a deal, but then when you released the statement to the papers, you said you've decided not to stay.
Yeah, and is that, exactly.
For Arsenal fans, it's still a difficult period and to get their heads around. But they still don't quite understand it, I don't think.
I can promise you, on my kids, if someone comes with proof that Arsenal offered me a deal, I will give you $1 million now, today. Yeah.
But so, did you make it almost impossible to offer you a deal because you were so demanding, because you were so desperate to win the Premier League?
No, it was Arsenal's decision not to offer me a deal, and that is up to them, you know. After many conversations, it came clear that we had different ideas.
And what was it that you think was lacking? Like, what did you need from Arsenal at that time to convince you?
I had 7 points where I thought Arsenal could improve, and in my opinion, those 7 points should they should start with dealing with them straight away to be able to compete with the best teams.
Do you remember what they were?
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't really matter what points they were. What matters is that Ivan decided that he didn't agree on one single point of those 7 points, which is fair enough. So taking that information on board, so Arsenal doesn't offer me a deal. They didn't agree with my views. You know, and my views were only to help. You know, it was like honest views of how the club should move forward. That's a very clear message. You know, for me, it is not an issue anymore. I'm now talking with you about it for the second time, and that is fine. It is not an issue for me. That's life. That's life at the top. You know, clubs, businesses make decisions, you know, and players as well in this case do as well. And I'm perfectly happy how it ended up. You know, I went to Manchester United. We won the league. You know, so it's perfectly fine for me. And I'm not angry with Ivan, you know, and I'm grateful to have worked with Arsene for 8 years. He played such a crucial part in my career. I can honestly say that without his influence, I would not be the player I ended up with in the end. So I'm thankful. I'm happy and thankful. It's just that there are certain facts you can't look away from. You know, it's just how it was.
And is it hard when you can't talk because you know you played through injuries, you dedicated yourself every day, you trained hard, you loved the club, loved the fans, loved the manager.
Yeah, I did.
And then when the fallout happens,
yeah.
You just have to kind of accept it. And I always, you know, whether it's football or something else, I think that's a very difficult position for a human being to be in, where you're like, hold on, you've seen 10% of the truth and you've made the other 90% up, you know?
Yeah, but I do sort of realize that people have that judgment ready based on 10%, like you said. And that is how it is. But honestly, I can, you know, I'm grateful for Arsenal, for the years I've played there, for Arsene. Ivan and me didn't really click. That can happen as well. But, you know, it's a big man's world. And there is a moment where you have to move on, you know. And like I said as well, with sometimes in the top, it can be ruthless, you know. Sometimes in your favor, sometimes against you. But to come back on this topic as well, how do you deal with that, you know, how do you deal with such things who have such a big impact on your life, you know? Key to that is communicating, keep talking, and although some situations can be very difficult, stay open for others. Because I know a lot of colleagues of mine as well who tend to close up, you know, when things become difficult, they close up and they stop to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
But that is not the solution. You should stay yourself, stay open, keep asking questions, and stay friendly, you know? And
so you made a comment earlier, Robin, where you spoke about when you first, as a young player, you had to know your place in terms of what you could say and what you could challenge. Yeah. When did you feel that it was your place to go and make these 7 points and challenge the culture and what you saw the club needed to do?
Yeah, that was my period when I was the captain, top scorer. That was the period where I felt that, you know, my views would count.
Right.
And as a 20-year-old kid, your views of how the club should move forward don't really count. You know, then you have to fight for your place, be quiet and learn and be a better player, try to be a better player every day. But I was 28 back then, 29. You know, I felt, you know, that it was my right to give my honest opinion.
Sure. It sounds like you were isolated on your own in terms of that the club decided to reject you from the organisation. Do you feel you could have recruited other characters within that dressing room that had equal weight or equal credibility to enhance your argument?
Yeah, good point. For example, some colleagues did came up and did wanted to support me, but I said no, because for one reason is that I didn't want to put them in a difficult place. I didn't want to put them in my place because it was my right to speak out. And I was the captain, you know, of that team. So in my opinion, if I would bring two or three other guys who shared my opinion, it would put them in a difficult place. I will not do that because, you know, I will take the blame. I will live with the consequences, whatever they are. But I don't want to put you guys into this position.
It's not an easy thing, is it, for a football club to say, actually, that footballer, that individual player can help to change the culture of this football club. But maybe that's the healthiest thing. The healthiest thing to do at a football club is to take the input mm-hmm. from an experienced pro, a 19-year-old who can tell you what the pathway is like from the academy, from the person that serves the lunch. Everyone, I think, not just in football, but in life, everyone should be able to add to a culture.
I think so too.
Clive Woodward used to talk about it, that the trouble is when you're a head coach, everyone tries harder in the gym, everyone runs a bit faster.
Yeah.
So you never see the
question
truth.
Is, what's happening when you're not in the gym?
It's a very good point. It's a very good point. But the at clubs, they tend to have to sort of create that feeling like, okay, you are a football player, you should stick to playing football. Well, I am more of the type of guy, you know, even the kid man, his opinion, I would like to know, you know, especially him, because he's right in the middle of that team. What is the reason why this some presidents or people in higher functions behave like that? And the only reason I can come up with is that they're trying to protect their own position.
Sure.
And is that big? Is that a big way of thinking? No, of course not.
Sure.
You know? And that should change, in my opinion. You should listen because you're all in it together. And in a smaller version, I like when it was mid-20s, I just realized because I, early days I was like, yeah, okay, you know, this is my position. I have to try to play and. I don't really talk to the manager. And then at one point, I was talking to Arsène. At first, I was scared to talk to him. And then at one point, I realized, like, no, hang on. So we are this team. We have the coach. He has his staff. We have the medical staff. We have Mr. Dean in the first couple of years around. I said, we should all work together. So I should really start opening up to the coach because we have to. So we are working together on the same target. So why, there's no reason for me to be scared of the coach. Why should I be scared of him? So that was the moment where I realized like, okay, hang on. You know, I would just ask him questions. I would just talk to him. Like,
it's almost like you realize that your job is more than just doing your job.
Exactly.
This is actually a common theme, I think, with the conversation we've had with Robin, whether it's writing down notes, whether it is going and seeing Arsene Wenger about the future of the football club, whether it is taking on board criticism from Louis van Gaal that you're going to leave Man United and trying to retain your place there. The recurring theme, I think, is that there was a moment in your career where you realised you have to take the responsibility. Yeah. No one else is going to run your career for you.
Yes. And that is what I did when I was about 24, 25, halfway. And I actually had this chat last week. Funny enough, seriously, with my son. So my son plays at Feyenoord. He played against Ajax under 14. He was on the bench. He didn't play. So in the car on the way back, he was like a bit moody, disappointed, complaining a little bit about others, about the coach, etc. And then I said, but Shaquille, I said, you sound like a loser, you know, if you talk like this in a way. You sound like you lost. I said, you are blaming him, you're blaming her, you're blaming this, you're blaming everything. I said, but I don't hear one single thing about yourself. I said, winners, I said, they take control and they blame themselves and they look where they can improve. Yeah. And this is what you should be thinking about. So I didn't tell him what he should think about. You should ask yourself the question, are you a loser or are you a winner? I said, for me, it doesn't matter. I said, because I'm your dad. The only job I have and your mom has is when you're 20, that you're a good boy, that you're ready for life. You know, you can make your mistakes. You can do what you want. I love you for the same amount. It doesn't matter for me if you make it as a football player or not. I said, but you say that this is your passion. So you should take control of your life and stop complaining because sounds like a loser. I said, then I don't mind. If you want to be a loser, be a loser. I still love you as much. I said, it doesn't matter for me. I said, but if you want to be a winner, take control of your life and stop complaining about others. And then I watched him train the next morning. My wife said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to watch this session." 2 days later, actually, because they played on Saturday and Monday morning. So I'm there sitting, cold, hoodie on. I'm looking and I see this tiger training, running, working. And I was like, okay. He realized he has to take control of his life. He's 13.
That's the podcast right there, by the way. Yeah. Isn't it? That is it. That is everything High Performance Podcast is
parental
about.
Parental advice and yes. Everything. But did anyone ever have that conversation with you?
Well, in like bits and pieces.
Stages, yeah.
Yeah, over the years. What I liked about, for example, Arsène, is that he never really judged me, you know. It was almost like a parent in a way. Because my son, it doesn't help if you judge people constantly, if you tell them off and if you say, you have to do this. It doesn't work like that. You know, it's their process. You have to respect their process of your kids or your friends. And you can advise them. You can guide them for a certain way. But in the end, they have to make their mistakes. They will make their mistakes. Let them make it. And then they decide what they do with it. You know, but sometimes it's good to give them a guideline. But Arsène as well. Arsène said, "Why are you not a top player? You're still not a top player." I said, "Okay, tell me why I'm not a top player." "No, I'm not telling you. You have to find out yourself." You know, so I had conversations like that. He said, "You have to ask yourself the right questions." He said, "Look around you." He said, "You saw all these top players, but you're not one of them."
Did he?
Yeah.
And your reaction can go two ways. Then you can either deal with that and make yourself a top player, or that can break some people.
Yeah, and then I started to look at Perez, how he played. Look at Jungberg, how he made his runs. Look at Dennis. Look at Thierry. Look at Vieira. I was thinking, he's right. I'm so far off. You know, these guys are on such a level. That's where I want to go. But he was not forcing me into it, you know?
You had to find the answers.
I had to find the answers myself.
And Isn't that brilliant coaching? Isn't that the art of great coaching?
I think so too.
Pose a question and then let you answer.
Yeah, exactly. But that is the perfect way because you have to feel it. You know, if you see it or if you hear it, okay, sometimes it can be enough, but most times it's not enough. You have to feel it. You have to find out yourself, you know, and along the way you can make mistakes, you can struggle, but in the end you decide if you want to be a winner or a loser. It's your decision.
Right, we're going to finish with some quick fire questions.
Okay.
Yep. What is the absolutely unacceptable behavior that you just don't tolerate? What's the one thing that really winds you up?
I think as a person, it defines you, how you behave towards people you don't think you need. You know, I think that is what they find, that is the status of a person, in my opinion. So, for example, if you're in a restaurant and you're arrogant towards the waitress, for example, or to the people who help you, and you're one of them, then I don't think you're a good person, you know, or especially towards the people who you don't tend to need. You know, if you're a good guy, just be good because you're good, not because you think you might need someone or...
So what would you say, Robin, are the three non-negotiable behaviours that you and people around you have to buy into?
You have to be polite. You have to have manners.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I tell my kids as well. But this is quickfire. It's not really going well. It's quickfire.
That's fine. what are the three?
Politeness, manners, and desire to achieve.
What advice would you give to a teenage Robin van Persie just starting his career?
Just relax. Just relax. Have a breather.
Enjoy the journey.
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And how did you react to your greatest failure?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer quick fire, right?
What is your greatest failure?
Yeah, good question. We have to find that out first. So many.
We'll come back to that one.
Yeah.
Are you happy?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Yeah, not perfect, but happy, yeah.
How important is legacy to you?
Yeah, important. Important because I like the idea that I had an influence on some people along the way, like a positive influence. So that is some sort of legacy.
And not just related to football, but this is related to life, okay? What is your one golden rule to living a high-performance life?
Try to live in one world. That is very difficult, especially nowadays. distractions all over the place, but try to live that world what you choose for. Then you're able to compete at the highest level, you know, because you tend to mix it up and to be the best, for example, player you can be, and then but there's a nice party there as well, and let's go to the party and let's do this and let's do that. You try to live in 5-6 worlds. Try to, especially during your prime time, during your career, try to live in one.
It comes back to taking responsibility, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Have you worked out your greatest failure yet? Maybe you just didn't have one, man. Well, let's imagine your son fails, yeah?
Yeah.
What would you say to him once he's failed at something? What's the best way to react to that moment? Because I'm a real firm believer that failure is healthy. Failure is a good thing.
Yeah. And failure, you should make mistakes. You should. I'm telling my kids as well, and we are trying to raise them very openly, and we're trying to sort of send them the message that they can make mistakes, can fail, but that, you know, but whatever they do. And my daughter, she rides a horse now 5 times a week, and she's really serious about it. I said, okay, I said, you can fail, you can even fall off the horse, you can fall off, it's fine, but you know, once you found your passion, do your best, do your best, your maximum, give your maximum, whatever that is, then it's always fine, you know. And then you can fail or you can fall off as many times as you want, but do your best.
Brilliant. Do you know what? That conversation was exactly what I hoped it would be.
I really liked it. Thank you very much.
Top man.
Thanks, mate.
Well, Damien.
Jake.
What stood out for you?
Just this self-awareness, his saving honesty, both with himself and with other people around him, which I imagine can be quite difficult for people to hear occasionally, but there's a transparency to what he was saying.
I like the fact that he's so honest. He sort of talks really clearly about when he wasn't in the right place mentally, like when he was a young lad and he struggled to kind of control his own temper and his own emotions. And to compare a young guy who got wound up on the football field to the point where it impacted his performances and exhausted him, compare that to a guy in his mid to late 20s who went into the office of one of the most famous football managers we've ever had in English football and gave him his 7 points to improve the football club. It comes back to that conversation about responsibility once again, and also someone who had got himself into a place of such confidence that he felt he was able to do that.
Yeah, but and do it constructively.
But it tells you also about football, where they go, oh, well, he's a footballer, he's just a player, we can't listen to him. You know, maybe that's where things go wrong in the game.
Yeah, just but again, one of Robin's key messages was about that curiosity. Keep asking, keep inquiring, don't just accept your role, find out more, challenge.
I look forward to seeing whether young Van Persie makes it in the game, right?
He's been given some pretty strident advice.
Hasn't he? But no, that was really interesting. Everything I hoped it would be.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Well, it's not often you get big names like Robin Van Persie talking like that, is it? That was pretty special. If you enjoyed it, I'd love it if you would subscribe if you don't already. Even better, if you can leave a review so other people know what the High Performance Podcast is all about. I know life's busy, but if you can just spare 2 minutes, I'd be so grateful. Thanks so much to Finn Ryan from Rethink Audio, and do keep an eye out across social media for details of the next episode. For now, thanks a lot.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.